It's Monday, September 12th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Good morning, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, reaction continues to North Korea's latest nuclear test.
This can't be happening to me twice in one day. I thought I was going to die because I couldn't breathe.
September 11th, 2001, we hear a survivor's story 15 years after the terrorist attacks, how today's politics are reacting to the anniversary, and VOA's own September 11th memories from our correspondents who were there. It's all on today's International Edition. The United States is considering more unilateral sanctions against North Korea following Pyongyang's fifth and largest nuclear test. Speaking in Tokyo Sunday, U.S. Special Representative to North Korea Policy Sung Kim said in addition to action in the U.N. Security Council, both the United States and Japan, along with South Korea, will be looking at unilateral measures as well as bilateral and trilateral measures of cooperation. He gave no details of what those measures might be.
Well, we continue to work together to urge China to implement existing Security Council resolution, especially Resolution 2270, and to work with us to make sure that North Korea's behavior and their deliberation changes in a more productive and positive direction. I think our dialogue with China is robust, both ours as well as Japan's, and we will continue that effort.
Kim made the comments after meeting with Japanese foreign ministry officials, calling Pyongyang's behavior destabilizing. Hours later, North Korea called efforts to add sanctions laughable and vowed to strengthen its nuclear program even further. A foreign ministry statement said Pyongyang will work to step up its nuclear force in quality and quantity. North Korea claims it needs a strong nuclear weapons program to protect itself from U.S. aggression. The Yonhap News Agency reports South Korea and the United States are reported to have begun their search for radioactive materials following the nuclear test. China also spoke out against the tests, saying they were not conducive to the peace and stability of the Korean Peninsula. It's time now for us to check social media. And a big topic of the day is the 15th anniversary of the September 11th, 2001 terror attacks on the United States. Michael Lippin has been following the social media conversation on the 9/11 anniversary. He's here in the studio with us. Michael, what are you seeing?
Hi, Jim. Thank you. Well, the Twitter world is marking the anniversary with messages of tribute to the victims and photos and video clips from 15 years ago, as well as of today's memorial events in New York and other places. And the main hashtag that goes along with all these posts is #NeverForget. If you want to see a compilation of some of the best Twitter posts on the anniversary, check out the @TwitterMoments account, which highlights what Twitter calls the best of what's happening on Twitter in an instant. Now, Twitter Moments has a page devoted to #NeverForget, and that's where I saw an impressive video clip posted by U.S. newspaper USA Today, which shows how many people were killed at each of the sites attacked on 9/11, and also highlights some of the other key facts and figures that put the attack into perspective.
What else have you seen on Twitter Moments?
Well, that account also drew attention to what it calls a Twitter storm by former White House Press Secretary Ari Fleischer, who was serving in that post under President George W. Bush when the attacks happened. For much of today, Fleischer has been tweeting dozens of fascinating anecdotes of how President Bush and his team experienced that dramatic day, and it's that series of tweets that's called a Twitter storm. Here are two of the tweets. Speaking to Vice President Cheney, Bush said, "We're at war, Dick, and we're going to find out who did this, and we're going to kick their ass." Bush also on the phone with U.S. Democratic Senator Chuck Schumer of New York, with Bush saying, "Government is functioning. We'll come together. God bless." And speaking of memories of that day, I believe we're going to hear a little later in the show from one of the few people who escaped alive from the World Trade Center towers after they collapsed. He's a man called Frank Rosano, and he's a lawyer who lives here in D.C.
And a very nice interview that you conducted. We'll hear that a short time from now. Michael Lippin joins us with social media reaction. You can follow him on Twitter at @Michael_Lippin. I'm out there on Twitter as well at VOA Stevenson. And be sure to follow our International Edition stream at VOA_IE. Among the top stories that are trending in Asia, North Korea nuclear test is the largest but not unprecedented. Roadside Taliban bomb kills Afghan provincial police chief. Pakistan refuses fresh calls for Afghan trade with India through land routes. Meat prices spike as Pakistan prepares to celebrate Eid. China's Wuhan protests continue after village chief found guilty of graft. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and much more at our voanews.com website. And if you have a smartphone, follow us on your VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. VOA's International Edition continues. Here in the United States, it remains Sunday, September 11th, and this is the 15th anniversary of terrorist attacks that killed almost 3,000 people, destroyed the World Trade Center towers in New York, and badly damaged the Pentagon in Washington. Passenger jets were hijacked and used as the weapons. One crashed in a field in Pennsylvania as the passengers overwhelmed terrorists on that plane. VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman joins us now in the studio with how that day has affected politics in the present as we're nearing the election of our next U.S. president.
President Obama appeared at a ceremony at the Pentagon. He said that the United States must remain vigilant, but he also was very strong and forceful in saying that the United States must not change who we are as a nation, that essentially the terrorists win if we turn on each other, if we allow fear to dominate our politics. And it's sort of interesting that he should mention that, because we are in the midst of a truly ferocious presidential campaign where essentially the gloves have come off. They came off a long while ago between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. I suspect that both of them are lying low a bit today in terms of campaign appearances, not wanting to appear to be too crass on a day like today. However, they are on record with very different views as far as national security. On a 9/11 anniversary, it's a day when national security is definitely part of the conversation. And Donald Trump has said that the United States needs to lead, but peace through strength. He's promised to rebuild the military and have a military that's absolutely invincible, and that this will keep America's enemies at bay. Hillary Clinton has really savaged Donald Trump for a whole host of things that he has said, from endorsing the use of torture to targeting the family members of suspected terrorists. Yes, we are in a day of remembrance, but I don't think we can forget that there's a backdrop to this. And it's a very hard-fought electoral cycle where national security is part of the debate. And heaven forbid if there should be some other attack. It need not be on the scale of 9/11, but even another attack on the scale of the San Bernardino shootings. Mm-hmm. I suspect that national security will be on the minds of voters when they go to the voting booth.
And both candidates have, as you mentioned, in their own ways said that, you know, they would be the ones to keep America safe. And it comes up to the voters as to whom they believe and which one they will choose come November 8th. Fortunately for now, we have come this far without a major incident since September 11th, 2001, at least on U.S. soil. A lot of people working hard to keep it that way.
They are. And I work at the Capitol. I see the layers of security when I go into that building, and I'm sure that it's even more stringent for those who work at the White House. The fact remains that we are a free and open society, and given that we do not live under a police state, if someone is truly determined to carry out an attack, there's no absolute assurance that that attack will be detected, will be foiled, will be prevented. And it's something that I think Americans have had to come to grips with. Boy, Jim, how do you stop that kind of attack? That's something that even U.S. officials admit there is still work to be done on that front.
Very, very difficult questions and issues that we will deal with probably forever. But on this day, we remember those who lost their lives on September the 11th, 2001, and certainly are grateful to all of those dedicated to keeping this country safe. And thanks to Michael Bowman, our VOA Senate correspondent.
Thank you, Jim.
Washington-based lawyer Frank Rizzano is one of the few people who escaped from New York's World Trade Center tower after the towers collapsed on September 11, 2001 in those terror attacks. That morning, Rizzano was asleep in the adjacent Marriott World Trade Center. That's a 22-story hotel where he was staying on business. Awakened as the planes hit, he was still in his room when the South Tower collapsed and created a huge gash in the middle of his hotel. Rizzano was able to flee down a stairwell, but moments later the North Tower fell, demolishing almost all of what remained of the Marriott except a very small area where Rizzano and other survivors were trapped. In an interview with VOA's Michael Lippin in 2011, Rizzano described what happened next.
All I kept thinking to myself this time around was, this can't be happening to me twice in one day. I thought I was going to die because I couldn't breathe. Every breath you took, you drew in dust and dirt, and you couldn't get no oxygen. And I remember convulsively coughing, as did all of the other people in the group. Literally, it was like drowning. You know, after a few minutes of coughing and hacking, the dust and the debris starting to settle down, we were able to get some oxygen. After we regain our composure, the next thing I recall is the fireman, Jeff Johnson, starting to look around to find a way out. He looks around the room, and then he finds a hole in the wall on the West Street side of the building. And he takes either a rug or a drape that he found, wedges it in some debris, throws it over the side of the building, and he says, this is our way out. We're going to climb down this rug. You know, again, I said, oh, boy, this is a little bit much for me to climb down this rug. But again, you know, the banquet manager of the hotel, he went down that rug, and I said, well, he made it. I can do it, too. And I remember just as I was getting on the rug, the other guy saying to the fireman, he says, this is crazy. And at any rate, I went down the rug or the carpet and down to the debris pile. I remember looking around and thinking to myself, this looks like a nuclear bomb has gone off in the city. Just complete desolation. There was a cloud of dust and debris. There were things still falling down around you. We get past the debris pile, get to the other side of West Street, and Jeff said to the three of us, said, you guys keep walking till you hit the river, and that's what we did. So we walk down, we get down to the river, and there's a policeman there, and he looked at me, and he said, you're bleeding from the head. He says, you have to be evacuated out of the city. And to tell you the truth, until he said that to me, I didn't know I was bleeding. He said, I'm going to put you on a police boat. He said, we can't take you to a hospital in New York because there's no way to get out of the area. So we'll put you on the police boat, and we'll take you to a hospital in New Jersey. And that's what they did. At Bayonne Hospital, they took a CAT scan and they said, look, you got some bleeding into the brain cavity and we're going to put you in intensive care. Fortunately, the bleeding stopped on its own. And 3 days later, they released me from the hospital. My wife had come up and then we drove back to Washington. I was in no pain other than, you know, I had a lot of survivor's remorse or survivor's guilt, thinking, you know, why did you live?
One of many incredible stories from September 11th, 2001, Rizzano says the courage of the firemen and policemen who responded to the 9/11 attacks is more, he thinks, than his own personal story. So much about September 11th, 2001 is on our website at voanews.com, and be sure to follow us on Twitter at @VOA_IE and on Facebook at VOA Now for more. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
Do you know the political process that determines who the next president of the United States will be? Tune in to VOA's extensive coverage of the campaigns, the voting, and the final tallying to find out how citizens choose their next president. Right here on VOA.
News is mobile and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
Early on a warm, beautiful Tuesday in September, no one could imagine that by the end of the day they would have witnessed a world-changing event and be so personally connected to it. Our VOA family thankfully was not harmed on 9/11, but the event left indelible images in everyone's personal experiences that day. Program host Sarah Williams was at our headquarters, located at the foot of Capitol Hill in Washington.
I was not supposed to be on the air that day. I was actually getting ready to do a meeting, and television was on, and we had heard that there was one of the towers had been hit, and I think most people just thought it was some sort of an accident. And then the second plane went into the other tower, and I think everybody realized we were under attack. So what happened is somebody yelled at me, "Sarah, let's go up to the newsroom."
Producer and studio director Tracy Carter.
Everything was done on the fly. Instead of recording in Studio 29 at the time, we went down to one of the core studios on the second floor. And we did a lot of phoners, a lot of remote lines. I mean, it was really intense. But from a production standpoint, an editorial standpoint, everything went well. But it seemed like the world was coming to an end.
Reporter Faith Lapidus.
I took my audio equipment and I went out onto the mall to get reaction from people. A lot of people didn't know what was going on. They hadn't heard anything about it. I had to tell them what I knew, which wasn't a lot. And then we would get additional information. Somebody would say, oh, the Pentagon was hit by a plane. And once I had information and comments from people, I tried calling the newsroom to report back in, and all the phone lines were blocked or down.
I remember walking up Capitol Hill to the Capitol building where I was a correspondent.
Debbie Tate.
There was a guard standing there, and he said to me, "I want you to leave right now. I want you to hightail it. Get out of here. We have good intelligence that another plane is on its way to this building." And I remember running down Capitol Hill to VOA, and I had sort of an out-of-body experience. I felt like I was looking down at myself. I couldn't seem to run fast enough. It was like I was running in slow motion and thinking there's a plane somewhere up there that's aiming for me and this building. It was really quite frightening.
Features reporter Adam Phillips.
It was a strange combination of calm and panic, I guess you could say. I mean, the press were given the very sort of harrowing scene of standing above the parking lot to the Pentagon and seeing what must have been 80 or 100 ambulances just idling, unable to get in to help anybody because they would get burned themselves if they went in. So there wasn't anything happening, and everything was happening.
Program host Susan Yockey.
The highway, by the time I got out of here, was eerily empty. And I remember driving by on my way home by the Pentagon and seeing the flames shooting up into the sky and the firemen out on huge ladders up in the air. And I could smell the smoke of the Pentagon. And it smelled like paper. It smelled like burning paper. And I'll always remember that moment.
Program host Paul Westphalen.
I describe a scene around Union Station as absolutely total gridlock. People trying to get out. There's a roundabout there to get into Union Station. And people were just trying to flee the city the best way they could. I sat there and I said, what am I going to do? I could interview people, or I could put my bag down, and I directed traffic for about 5 minutes to make sure that some emergency vehicles could get where they were going, and then I walked back here to the office.
This is VOA national correspondent Jim Malone. On September 11th, I was sent up from Washington to New York City to report on the events around Ground Zero. People began to applaud the firefighters and police officers who were working down in the site and who were making their way up the highway as well. And it struck me that although it was a terrible time for the United States and the United States was under attack and Americans felt very angry about it, they also had a sense of pulling together, of unity and community, and it was on exhibit in New York City, both for that day and for many days to come.
Beijing correspondent Jim Randall.
I think the most horrifying thing I saw were people jumping out of the building, out of the burning building, 100 stories in the sky. Their situation was obviously incredibly desperate, that they felt no alternative but to jump to their deaths. That's pretty horrifying. And I thought, well, we better find these people and make it so that they cannot hurt us again.
Wherever you may be happening to listen in the world, we hope that your day is peaceful, calm, and uneventful. You've been listening to International Edition, and you can find us at voanews.com, also on Facebook at VOA Now, and follow us on Twitter at VOA_IE. For our director, Tracy Carter, engineer Aydin Utku, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Thank you so much for listening today. Have a wonderful day ahead.
Next, an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions.
15 years ago, September 11th, 2001, nearly 3,000 men, women, and children from over 90 countries died when terrorists used hijacked civilian aircraft to destroy the World Trade Center in New York City and damage the Pentagon near Washington, D.C. They crashed another civilian airliner in a field in Pennsylvania when the passengers, realizing the hijackers' intent, refused to allow them to attack yet another target and fought back. The world changed that day, not because of the deaths of 3,000 people or because the attack took place in the United States, but because a group of terrorists saw fit to inflict as much damage as possible on random civilian targets. The people who died that day represent a cross-section of ages, ethnicities, and religious affiliations. They had nothing the terrorists wanted, had done nothing to cause harm to their murderers. They died because it is the nature of terrorists to attack those who are least likely and able to fight back, and in that way to cause revulsion and horror in all civilized people. That is why the United States, along with the rest of the global community, confronts terrorism everywhere and advances freedom and democracy as an alternative to the ideologies of hatred and repression. September 11th is a date seared into the minds of all of us at the U.S. Department of State and of citizens across America. Together, we honor the memory of the men, women, and children murdered in 2001, said Secretary of State John Kerry in a written statement. We also remember those who died in yet another 9/11 terrorist attack 4 years ago in Libya: Ambassador Chris Stevens, Sean Smith, Glenn Doherty, and Tyrone Woods. They were brave, dedicated professionals who worked on behalf of their country to help others live in freedom, dignity, and peace, wrote Secretary of State Kerry. Friends and adversaries alike should understand, the United States will never be intimidated by terrorists, he said. Terrorists can cause tremendous suffering, but they can neither weaken our determination nor sway us from our purpose. For Americans at home and overseas, shared tragedy brings us together, adds to our vigilance, and strengthens our resolve not only on September 11th, but every day of the year.
That was an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions.